Kids Comics.
And here are your hosts, Michael and Andrew Leyland.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And you've probably already noticed we sound better today. Last week.
We had a dip in production budget. The values went down a little.
We were submerged in the Sequest in the recording of last month's episode.
It's like, you know, that episode that just takes place entirely on the bridge. Well, we had to submerge ourselves, which is cheaper than being on land, apparently.
Apparently so, but resulted in a not terribly good audio quality because stupid me didn't check that the input settings on Audacity were recording from the actual microphone.
Oh, is that what it was? So why are you messing about with the microphone?
It was nothing wrong with the microphone. I haven't gone to audio setup in this new version of Audacity that I'd installed.
Right.
And said, install from, record from the Blue Yeti, please.
Right, okay.
So I don't know what it recorded from, like some internal piece of crap mic. Which would explain the dreadful sound quality. This one of them, like, I could have kicked myself. It's fundamental, isn't it?
Well, but if it's updated and you wouldn't know, and if it had the audacity to change.
See what you did there. Oh, y'all all right? Come back. Glad to have you with us. Pull up a chair. We'll talk about some funny books for a bit.
There's nothing funny about these books.
Clone Saga, Volume 1. I am, what's that, about halfway through it at this point?
Yeah.
If we have a look here, I am on page 679 of this epic tome. A classic up there with the Iliad, Homer's Odyssey, other such big books that you could mention. James Clavell's Shogun is less pages than this. And this is just volume one, lovely list. I am up to the three-part miniseries Funeral for an Octopus,
right?
In which Spider-Man, a.k.a. Peter Parker Spider-Man, not Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider yet, because we are over halfway through this first omnibus, and let me just work this out with maths, Jack All has actually happened. No, this is a true story, right? I'm not dissing on it because I'm thoroughly enjoying reading it. It is wonderfully 90s in every aspect. But, right, the first third of this can be summed up thus. Aunt May has had a heart attack and is in a hospital.
Right.
Mary Jane has decided because of this, she's going to reconnect with her own family.
Okay.
Peter Parker is going through one of his, I'm not Peter Parker, I am the spider moments.
Right.
Ben Reilly has shown up as a mysterious figure who has been revealed to be Peter's clone, who didn't, in fact, incinerate when Peter burned his body, but actually went off and wandered the road like Kane from Kung Fu for 5 years.
Right.
Has come back to pay his respects to Aunt May.
Okay. He's a bit preemptive. Has she died yet? Or
she has not yet died.
Right, okay.
In this particular tome.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much it. Okay. For the first third of this book.
So 600 pages.
Nothing happens to propel the story forward. For the first, it's about 400 pages, I would say. Where you compare it to Death of Superman. He was dead 6 issues in.
Right.
Man had had his back broken by chapter, 8? This, nothing.
But is this that kind of story, though? Is this just, this was going on in the soap opera at the time?
This very soap opera, but you finally get to, where is it? Let me have a look. Kane shows up.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know who Kane is yet.
The other clone.
Yes, but he's another clone of Peter Parker. And you get to the story, Web of Life, Web of Death, which are 2 4-part stories. And finally, something happens.
Okay.
Peter Parker is affected by a virus by the Vulture.
Right.
Dr. Octopus saves his life.
Okay.
Because, you know, life without Spider-Man wouldn't be worth living, would it? And then Kane kills Dr. Octopus, snaps his spine in half.
Right.
Murders him dead.
Okay.
He gets better, so don't worry. Because none of the creators were on board with that, apparently. Right. Apparently, the editor said, no, we need to show Kane's a badass, so we'll have him kill a slightly pudgy, overweight dude.
Okay.
Because nothing shows badass more than killing somebody that you clearly outclass.
It's the way to do it.
But anyway, so he's dead now.
Okay.
And Peter's no longer the spider. He's back being Peter because Mary Jane has told him she's pregnant.
Okay, right.
Ben Reilly has spent 600 pages going, I'm a clone and I have no right to life. And there's a part of me that's like, but you've spent 5 years coming to terms with this. Why have you regressed?
Okay.
Anyway, that's where we're at with the Clone Saga, lovely listener. I know a lot of people actually did say we're quite enjoying your Clone Saga recap. Because, let's be honest, I don't think we're ever going to cover this in depth.
Yeah.
It may be fun to, like... I mean, it would take a long time for you to read that omnibus, and then we just do a talk about it.
I mean, from the sounds of it, it probably wouldn't take me that long.
It probably wouldn't. Oh, no, it's very 90s. There's a lot of dialogue and recaps and all that stuff.
A lot of poetic angst.
Yeah, a non-poetic angst in many cases. But I'm up to Funeral for an Octopus. My problem with this is...
There's only one.
No, I have this. My main problem. This is the first volume. I've got volumes 3 and 4, also known as volumes 1 and 2 of the Ben Reilly saga omnibus. But volume 2 of the Clone Saga has come out last of the 4 and isn't out till the end of March. So I'm going to have read this.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be sat there going, so do I jump forward and read the Ben Reilly stuff? Or do I wait till March and pay the extortionate price that the volume number 2 is, because it's ridiculous. It's the most expensive of the 4, which I think they've done on purpose.
Is it bigger, though? Like, is there more in it?
I have no idea. I don't know how it can be much bigger than this, because this is ultimately... Is this over 1,000 pages? Like I say, if we scroll around to... They stopped doing the page numbers when they add all the back matter, which is a bit of a pain, to be brutally honest with you, because then you're left just vamping like this. Which there are none. They have literally... All right, so... When it goes to full bleed on page 774, they stop doing page numbers.
Okay.
Because that's when the books all move to that better printing process.
There's 774. There's around like 900.
Yeah, there must be about 900 pages in that August tome. But like I said, well worth being in print alongside such classics as, I don't know, the complete works of Shakespeare. I am enjoying it, actually. I am thoroughly enjoying it, but there's an awful lot of eye rolling. Anyway, should we do an email?
Yes.
I think we should do an email. Our email tonight. Sorry, I thought you were saying goddamn wing. From Michael Bell. That's you, then.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? It's my northern
little... guttural northern tone. Michael and Andrew, seriously, the accent threw me. I can't believe that. I was wondering what Michael had against wings all those years. This episode cleared up a lot of things.
Well, I never did like Paul McCartney.
Don't be dissing on wings. All right, Mullican tie's not great. But, you know, Merry Christmas, everyone. No, that's not great either.
That one seasonal song.
Yeah. Who did he did thing? Your Band on the Run's good.
Your Band on the Run's fine.
And Live and Let Die's good. That frog song, was that with wings?
That frog song. No, is it just Paul McCartney?
Dum,
I don't know.
Oh, dum, dum. Anyway, you're not here to listen to us sing Paul McCartney standards. I don't know, you may be. I don't know. I really enjoyed this episode. Thank you, Michael. I've never been a fan of big mech suit anime, not because I thought it was bad. It just never appealed to me. And I've had several friends over the years try to get me to like various genres of anime and manga, and it just never took. But I love when people love things, and not only was it great hearing Michael absolutely exude joy in talking about this property, I also dug Andy's insights. The whole thing was keen. See, that's when it works best, isn't it? When one of us brings something that the other one knows nothing about, and it just explodes an entire new universe.
It's very rare that I exude joy and enthusiasm, so it's good to know that it came out somehow.
Rare as a Mancunian that you exude anything other than hey. Anyway, regarding Andy's statement about Marvel and DC sleeping on manga, I need to check the bookstores, what the bookstores look like now. But for the longest time in the early noughties, it seemed like when a new Barnes & Noble or Books A Million opened, they'd all have loads of teenage girls sitting on the floor with their knees tucked to her chest reading something from the manga section. For the longest time, there was this war going on. And for a while, manga was winning. This doesn't seem to be the case anymore. But then again, the graphic novel section of the bookstores in the area have been eroding fast over the years. So I don't know if the manga taking over thing is happening now here in the States. But holy crap, it was a thing for a good long time. Take care, fellas. Looking forward to the next one, Mikey Mike B. P.S. I kind of resent the shots taken at my gangbuster fan club. I'll have you know we can now fill a booth at the Waffle House and need a cheer on the end. So that's what? Seven people in the Gangbuster fan club. Good. I'm glad you're all having fun, Gangbuster fans.
Just a bunch of dudes gangbusting.
I'm just going to say they're the gangbangers.
It makes me feel better than busting a gang.
Oh, dear me. We are so naughty. Anyway, today, lovely listener, we are covering what I think is possibly, and I'm stuck on this, I can't decide if this is the best comic book series of 2023.
Right.
Or the best comic book series of 2024, because the final issue came out in 2024.
Oh, well, there we go. It doesn't count then.
Why doesn't it count?
Most of it came out in 23.
I know, but...
And also, we still got a whole rest of the year left. Something could come out that's...
But that's what I mean. Something could arise that, you know, knocks this into a cocked hat.
Yeah.
I don't know what that phrase means. I just remember it in an old episode of Batman.
It's like, what if the Oscars came out and did Best Film of the Year, but they did it at the end of January?
Well, they do, don't they?
Did they? Well, yeah, but it's for the year before. Yeah.
It's be 2023.
So, okay, maybe. Yeah, well, yeah, just...
But the trade is coming out in 2024.
It's so the best comic. That's true. It could be the best-selling trade.
That's true. It could be. We are indeed talking about The Enfield Gang Massacre by Chris Condon, writer, and artist Jacob, I am not Sean Phillips. He used to have a sign saying yeah, that. Yeah. Cons, it was quite funny. And this was the first spin-off from the massively successful Image comic series, That Texas Blood. The latter is a Stephen King-style horror that follows the 70-year-old sheriff of Ambrose County, Joe Bob Coates, as he tries to maintain order. There is no bigger indication of the problems we have at the minute.
Right.
That guy is 70 and he's still working. Guy should have been retired years ago, man. But no, still got to haul his ass out of bed every day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, doesn't get social security till he's 75. So far, That Texas Blood has ran for 20 issues, all of which are available in 3 trade paperbacks, which I have, 2 of which you bought. But be warned, the trades do not contain the copious amounts of back matter the original comics do, nor the letters pages, nor, and this is crucial, the Spotify playlists.
Oh, yeah.
Carefully curated to add to your reading enjoyment.
Yeah.
Did you like that?
I didn't dig into them, but yeah.
I did. I played a couple of them. I was quite impressed with it. Thought it was quite cool. Because That Texas Blood already jumps around in time. Have you read any of them?
I have not.
No, okay. Some of the stories see Joe Bob as a younger man. Some of them he's middle-aged. Some of them he's, like I say, he's 70. It doesn't really matter because it jumps around all over the place. It doesn't matter that I joined with that with the Enfield Gang Massacre. I hadn't read That Texas Blood when I bought this. What does matter is the background details, again included as a series of newspaper articles reprinted at the back of the book. What you are getting with the Enfield Gang Massacre is essentially 2 different stories.
Yeah.
The legend of what happened in 1875 is the bulk, the actual comic book part of it. And then the truth, as uncovered by an investigative reporter and published in the Texas Record in 1996.
Well, I'd argue there's 3. There's the truth, which is the comic.
Mm.
There's the investigative truth, which is the back matter. And then there's the written truth, which is alluded to in the back matter. So even within the backup, they're discussing this is the truth that we all know, and that's one story, and then this is the truth as I'm discovering it. So there's arguably, I'd say, there's 3 different versions of this.
Yes, there's the one that you read, then there's the other one that you read, and then there's the bit you're piecing together in your head as you're reading it.
Yeah.
Because it is very... For a story that is not dense at all when you're reading it, you're left at the end of it chewing on it so much of what did happen.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, well, I mean, we'll get to this later on, but it is one of those things where upon rereading it, without the back matter, drastically changed my opinion of it.
I'm the same as you. Because I read them.
Yeah.
And then for doing this, doing the synopsis, I only read the comic.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be influenced by the investigative journal stuff.
Yeah.
And only reading the comic is, it's a completely different story without that bit, which fascinated me when I was reading it. I am happy to report that according to Jacob on Twitter, X, I spoke to him.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Allegedly, as of this recording, the back matter is going to be in the trade.
Yeah.
Because the two stories do dovetail quite well. And I think that's a good move.
Because it is inherently a part of the story. Yeah. It's not back matter. So the kind of first comparison that sprung to mind for me was Watchmen's back matter, mm-hmm. that for the most part isn't tied to the narrative of the comic.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like the two hold hands very tightly. It's kind of difficult to have one without the other.
Yeah. And that Texas Blood's back matter.
Right.
You don't need, when you're reading the trades, you don't miss it. And I've looked it up since.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be like this.
Right.
And having read some of that back matter.
Okay.
In that Texas Blood, I'm like, oh, that doesn't really matter.
Is it kind of similar to the criminal stuff where it's like, yes, essays and that?
Yeah, but it's essays about the story. It's not, this is an essay about a film noir I like.
All right, okay. So it's just flavour.
Yeah, it's like, so like the first story will give you a bit of a backstory about Joe Bob.
Right.
But you can kind of infer that from the comic.
Yeah, okay.
So you don't need it. It's nice. And yeah. I preferred it to be in the trades.
Yeah.
Rather than ponder, well, do I have to buy all three of these again?
Right, yeah, yeah.
But the fact that they've decided to include everything in the trades means I don't have to buy it again, having got the six comics.
And there's a short story coming to it.
God damn. The first thing to note about the comic, which ran for six issues, in, as we've already discussed, the latter part of 2023 and early 2024, is the weight of it. It just feels different.
Well, it's the
it?
Paper stock, isn't
yeah.
it? It gives it a bit more weight.
At the behest of Condon and Phillips, this book is published on old newsprint rather than the new glossy stuff. It makes the interiors feel considerably different to the exteriors, like an old comic book. But it also gives the comic a feel and a texture that other books don't have.
There's almost a deceptive weightiness to them. Like, they look thick and dense, but then you can read through the comic in about maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you go back and take in the art.
Yeah.
Which is exceptional. Again, the trade's going to have this.
Yes.
The trade is apparently going to be the newsprint as well. The second thing to note are the covers. Not only do they link to make one big six-issue image, they wrap around.
They wrap around to make, yeah.
Yeah, so issue six leads back to issue one.
It's like, do you remember in the early 2000s, those Alex Ross paintings of Batman and Superman, and they were printed as like a mobile?
That would hang up in the comic shops, because that one was him ripping off the S and flying, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And wasn't the Batman one him just disappearing into the shadow?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I remember what you mean. This applies not to my copy, because I've got the second printing of issue one, which has a completely different cover by Sean Phillips, and it's a good cover.
Yeah.
But it ruins the rest of the six. That said, I only paid £1 an issue for the first four.
Mm.
I only bought five and six. That's why I bought it.
Yeah.
I found the first four issues, including the second print of issue one, in the pound bin at OK Comics in Leeds.
Mm.
So I thought, well, for a quid, or £4.
It is a very funny interlocking cover, though, because you'll have close-ups of gnarly people shooting. And then I think issue four is just a cart.
Yes.
There's just nothing.
There's people avoiding bullets on it.
It kind of seems a bit like, I've not planned out this issue. What's going on the cover here?
Yeah, so it does occur. Well, when you link them all together, though, even though they don't quite line up. So, like, if you compare those two,
yeah,
which is issues three and four, the her line on the red-headed girl doesn't quite line up, does it? But the mountain doesn't either, so... Something's gone awry there.
Could have always been the printing or something like that.
Could have been something wrong there. Anyway, should we give you the brief synopsis? And it's very brief because it's me. In Fort Lehane, Texas, 1875. I was almost going into the Ballad of Cat Ballou there. Wasn't it? I don't remember the words. Cat Ballou, something like that. Anyway,
this is riveting podcasting.
Riveting, and in Fort Lane, Texas, 1875. If I could have remembered the words to Cat Ballou, that would have worked. That would have gone over like gangbusters. Or gangbangers, who can say? In Fort Lehane, Texas, 1875, the Enfield gang rob a bank outside of town, leading to John Mowbray stoking up the local townsfolk to bring the gang to justice. This turns out to be easier than expected when Bill Burley, the bank teller, is found dead. Montgomery Enfield is as surprised as any of this, because when he left the bank, Burley was alive and well. Texas Ranger Captain Eli takes up the case. An ambush leaves four of the gang dead, but Enfield escapes to warn the rest, including his wife Amy. He finds LQ West skulking around. Before he can find out why, Eli arrives and lets the blood run free. Disgusted by what he sees, Ambrose County Sheriff Hardesty quits and Eli promotes Mowbray. Hardesty returns to Ambrose, where he learns from an eyewitness that it wasn't Enfield that killed Bill Burley, and starts his own investigations, discovering that Mowbray may actually be the guilty party. Enfield wonders how they can be cornered at every turn, only to find out they've been sold out by LQ, who's up to his neck in debt. It's a standoff between the two men when Mowbray delivers the coup de grace. He's caught Enfield's wife, Amy. With no choice, Enfield turns himself over to be hung, with no trial, no due process, and no opportunity to defend his case. Hardesty at least lets them release Amy on the condition she leaves Ambrose and never returns. Enfield's preserved corpse ends up as a tourist attraction at Doc Malady's touring circus, and 31 years later, Amy visits to see Enfield one last time. Oh. It's quite a sad ending, though, isn't it?
It was.
You notice it's where it's getting it from?
Getting what from?
Did you not read Condon's bits?
Oh, it comes from...
So there's an occurrence in Owl Creek Bridge, which is turned into an episode of Twilight Zone.
Right.
But also, it's Jonah Hex's ending.
Right, yeah.
That's how Jonah Hex ends up, isn't it? As a stuffed tourist attraction.
Because I think by the time I reached that last issue, I personally felt like it was a bit of a damp squib. It's one of the things that I...
Brilliant!
No, I think it's...
No.
And what I think it was is, personally, this could have been because of me. It's a very fast-paced, explosive 5 issues.
Mm.
And were this a TV show or a film, that could have been a powerful ending. As the last issue of this, it just felt like a bit of a damp squib. And I don't know whether it's because of, you know, I'm willing to admit that it might be me. Maybe I'm expecting some kind of, you know, Butch Cassidy last stand rather than the whimper that it goes out on rather than the bang. But I felt kind of a little bit, I don't know.
I don't agree with that. I think him turning himself over for his missus and then mob mentality taking over and not giving him a trial and not listening to his side of the story. But
there isn't a mob, and this comes into my...
They have, because they've roused up the entire townsfolk to just kill him.
This comes into my other big problem with this, is a lot of the story comes through between the panels. There's no mob mentality. It's one guy.
No, but it isn't, though, because he stokes them all up earlier on.
At the very beginning.
Gets them... to allow him, who isn't the elected sheriff, John Mowbray, who isn't really anything in that town, he gets them to back him to go and hound them and kill them all with no due process, no arrest, no chance for them to defend themselves, because we know they're innocent.
That isn't what happens, though, is it?
Go on.
It's Mowbray and the Ranger. It's just them two.
It's those two that are evil.
And you come to the end and you're told... the judge comes and he says no one wants you to hang, but then you get to ultimately nothing. At the hanging, there isn't a crowd. There's a bunch of people around, and I don't know whether this was...
There is a crowd.
I don't know whether this was the case of...
Look, there, on that page.
5 people.
Oh, and there's more than 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's at least 10, though.
But what I'm saying is, it's a quiet ending. But I felt a little disappointed.
Why, though? Because he gives himself up so they won't kill Amy.
Yeah.
Because he sacrifices himself for her.
We've already established that he is a good person and does not deserve this.
We don't know that he's a good person.
Well, he's bad, but he ain't as bad as them, kind of thing.
I mean, like you've already evoked Butch Cassidy, and the opening of it is that, and it is Alias Smith and Jones, and He robs the bank with a cheeky smile and a glint in his eye and no small amount of humour.
Well, the first time I read this, that was essentially what I got. It's your channel surfing, you stumble on TCM and you're watching Butch Cassidy from the bit where the police officer sees the stolen horses and pieces together. That's essentially what the Enfield Gang Massacre is. It's the last half hour of Butch Cassidy.
And the relationship between him and Bill Burley as well is the relationship that Butch has with the guy who's protecting the safe.
Yeah.
And Butch's argument is, but it's not your safe. Why do you care?
Yeah.
And he's like, but it's my job to protect the safe.
Yeah. And it's left me wanting... There was very little in this comic in a good way that left me wanting more. You know, Condon shows in the back matter that some of these, you know, these characters do have a history. They do have characters. They are people. And at first reading, it's like, yeah, there's a lot going on here that we don't necessarily see. This is the final chapter that we're coming in on. But then on second reading, I found myself going completely the opposite direction. I'm thinking to myself, well, no, there actually isn't much here. There's only one direction you can go in when you name yourself, you name the comic.
Well, he says...
The ultimate fate of your main character.
Condon does actually say it's called the Enfield Gang Massacre.
But the more I'm reading this, the more I'm thinking the saving grace of this comic is Condon's honesty and in his little letters page at the back where he says it was a challenge to balance everything. He says it was a challenge to get what they wanted to do in Limited. And ultimately, I ended up feeling that as great as the moments are, the comic is not as good as the sum of its parts. It's lacking for me.
See, I didn't think that at all. I mean, obviously, like you say, it begins with him already dead and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's not burying the lead in what's happening. For me, the fun, if you can use the word fun, the meat of the story comes from the comic leads you to believe one story.
Yeah.
And it doesn't shy away from the fact that the town's lawmen, the sheriff, Hardesty, and the mayor, is it the mayor or whatever?
Yeah.
They don't trust John Mowbray.
No.
They don't like Enfield.
Yeah.
But they don't trust Mowbray either.
Mm.
They already believe him to be a bad un.
Yeah.
But he, as we've seen quite a lot of recently, manages to convince the populace that his is the right course of action.
But I didn't get that. At no point did I believe that he stoked the fire of the town. He's wormed his way in. He was there nagging at the side of the ranger until the actual sheriff sees that what they're doing ain't right and calls it a day and picks up the badge. He's not stoked any fires. There's no mob behind him. It's him worming his way through. If there is a mob, we learn about it in the back matter, but that's not what we're seeing.
No, we don't see that because he spends most of the story chasing the Enfield gang. But I think you're partially right until the guy shows up with his arm bleeding who says that Bill Barley's dead.
Yeah.
And at that point, he's got the townsfolk on his side. Hunt them down, kill them. They've killed our bank guy.
No point does he say who killed him. Obviously, he can't because that would give away the plot twist.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know, does he? He just says Bill Barley's dead. He doesn't know who did it.
Well, he would have
done. Because then he dies.
Because he also got shot by the same guy.
So
no point does he say Enfield.
He doesn't, which is true. So he doesn't actually point it out.
And I feel like if there were more of this, it would have felt richer and it would have been more in line to what we read in the back matter. If we actually see the town people get riled up, maybe we see the town people watching the massacre, but we don't.
So the massacre all happens well away from where the town is.
Yeah.
But they do see the hanging and they all show up for the hanging. And they don't seem overly bothered that they're not trying him.
No. But on rereading, I just felt a bit more like we should have been shown rather than told.
See, I don't mind that because that's not what it's about, really.
It is. Because we're led to believe that, especially in the back matter, that John Mowbray orchestrated all of these events. He manipulated, he rewrote history to suit him. He's this big bad scumbag who rewrote history to suit him. He orchestrated the deaths of borderline innocent outlaws. And everyone believes him. Everyone thinks he's this great guy. And that's what led to
the
Crown's legend being what it is now.
Mm.
But you don't get that from reading it.
Do you not think?
No.
That, you did. I got all of that from this. Now, it could be because I read it issue by... Well, I read the first four, and then I read the back matter, and then I read the next issue.
Yeah, that's
and then I read the back matter. So the seeds of what the investigative journalist is investigating are planted all the way through it.
Mm.
And like you see, he doesn't bury the lead. It's called the Enfield Gang Massacre. It starts, Enfield's already dead.
Yeah.
And stuffed and mounted. So you know it's not going to go the way.
Yeah.
But I actually thought his manipulate the way Mowbray's manipulation of the situation was actually quite well handled, given where we currently are as a populace.
Yeah. But I
you didn't see enough of the people saying, yeah, go get him.
No, I think what it essentially boils down to is my biggest problem with this is the back matter. Unfortunately, I think it both benefits and does a disadvantage to the story. It feels like Condon wrote a novel and then adapted it into a comic. The saving grace is he admitted it was difficult. He set out with these challenges. They wanted to do the three-panel storytelling.
Yep.
Darwin Cook did it to great effect, but Darwin Cook in New Frontier and Parker had the real estate. He had the pages. These guys don't. There's only so much they can do with that. That honesty is one of the saving graces, and I think it's why I'm a bit more lenient with it, because unfortunately there's very little there. It's all told in the back matter.
Mm.
So much so that by the time you get to issue, the first few issues are a who's who of all the characters before we ultimately see them and get killed off.
Yeah.
We get to about issue 4 or 5 and the back matter spirals off completely, telling a completely different story.
I agree with that. Because his investigation leads him to learn Amy's still alive.
Yeah. Now you,
but do you not find that realistic? That his investigative path that he was following is suddenly served this complete blindside.
Yeah,
and then he goes, "Well, that's a more interesting story."
But even within that, it completely goes off from the start of it. It's supposed to be an investigation on what really happened here. Mm.
But then who's he going to get the real story from more than the woman who was there?
And it felt like, in a message the other day, you said it recontextualizes the story that you just read in the comic. I argue that it doesn't recontextualize anything. It's a completely different narrative.
Mm.
It starts off as a who's who, and then it completely goes off. And I don't feel like the two ever feel connected. I'd argue that it's like going off to read like a who's like an ending explain article on IGN or something. Only the benefit is it's right there. You know, you don't have to watch 4 straight to Disney Plus TV shows to understand why your big bad's back. It's here in the book anyway. But there's so much disjointedness. I did not feel like the two narratives married well.
See, I disagree. This is the first time we have ever completely disagreed about something.
And like, it's not to say that I didn't enjoy it. I loved reading it. I loved how explosive and fast-paced it was. But
how good the art is.
Even with that, I have caveats.
Of course you do. I love the artwork. No, I don't agree with it. I think the first issue, I think you get everything you need to get there about John Mowbray stoking up the crowd to carry you through. I don't think you need them standing over the pitchforks to go get him, John. I don't think you need any of that. It's there enough. It's there enough for me that the actual legitimate sheriff of the town won't have any truck with this and thinks this isn't justice. That's enough for me.
But then, he's
the audience by proxy.
But then also there's the other argument brought up, is he not complicit? He's not done anything about it. He's moping around town while this is happening.
But he is trying to, at the very least, find out who did kill Bill Bartley. Because
he takes his time doing it.
He does.
He gets a haircut first.
Yes, does take his time. And if they had gone to a trial, maybe he would have presented his evidence. But obviously that's not what Mowbray wants.
No.
He wants to show that I am the person of justice. And he's essentially just hiding behind his badge.
Yeah.
And it does start... I mean, this is something we've done in a lot of fiction and a lot of comics we've covered, but it does actually allow you to look at this, put it through the prism of real life, which is what good fiction does, and go, well, who's the bad guys here? Enfield doesn't pretend to be anything other than what he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a bank robber. Yes, he's a thief.
Yeah.
There's no evidence in this he's a murderer, although it does say he has shot people
and
those people possibly died. So by definition, but was he shooting in self-defense or whatever? But he still put himself in a situation where he shot people.
Yeah.
So he's not a saint.
No.
By any measure. At the same time, are they saying John Mowbray is worse than him because he's hiding behind the law? He's hiding behind the batch. He's hiding behind the respectable position that he holds once he gets into that position. And therefore, what he says should be what goes. That's print the legend.
Yeah.
Because no one else is left alive to contradict him.
But there's allusions throughout as well that I thought was quite interesting, but not explored enough. There's certain kind of implications that there's more to Mowbray than there looks. Something borderline satanic, and but at the very least, financial and manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was just more of that. I wish he was the bad guy that you love to hate, but unfortunately, there's just not a lot there. It's explored a lot in the back matter, but yeah, he is exactly everything that you said, but there's not enough of it. And I don't know if it's a good thing that I'm left wanting more or if it's because I just feel like ultimately it's just a bit not just scratching the surface.
See, I think it's a good thing that you're left wanting more of it. I just don't agree with you that we didn't get enough of it. But also, I wonder how much of this plays into the fact that I have since gone on to read that Texas Blood.
Right.
Now, you can read this in isolation.
Yeah.
You don't need to know anything about that Texas Blood. Essentially, this is the beginning of Ambrose County.
Yeah.
And the argument is that this event meant something or did something or created something in that town.
Yeah.
That there's an evil there. It's literally, it's a hellmouth.
Yeah.
If you want to use that Buffy illusion.
But again, because I know it's in the back matter, isn't it? Where he references what I'm assuming are the story arcs in that Texas Blood where he mentions like a kidnapper or a murderer. And again, there wasn't that. There wasn't anything showing that. They hang him. Amy curses the town and swans off. Mm-hmm. And then we hear that this might have potentially led to the potentially being a... It's like there's so many different ideas going on that either don't come together or we don't see come together. So it feels like if they're just pulled a little more to the surface, there'd be something more tangible here than there isn't.
I don't know that I agree. I didn't come away from this thinking I needed more. I came away from it thinking that was a satisfying story. I thought I'd got everything from it that I needed to be able to not only enjoy the comic book bit, but the back matter was giving you extra. There's this one guy who the idea is, obviously, I've got it written down here somewhere, that they're playing with the idea that you should constantly reevaluate history and you should constantly reinvestigate what you know and possibly look at what you've been told as fact. But how far ultimately is he going to get?
Yeah.
Even though he's published this, he's published his investigations, I don't think he's going to cause this big ruckus. I don't think anyone's going to call for them to reevaluate the history of this part of Texas. I think John Mowbray's legend will carry on.
And it read a lot like, you know, your late night Discovery Channel TV shows, The Truth Explained, Myths Explored.
That as well,
That's the kind of vibe that I got from it. For all you know, this could be legitimate researching, or the guy could be a crack.
Yeah, and well, that's another angle as well. You're never told for definite that the investigative journalist's story is true.
Yeah.
He's piecing together stuff that we don't see in the comic, other than we know Enfield didn't kill Burley.
Yeah.
We know that's fact because Burley offers him a job.
Yeah.
Burley says, well, why don't you come and work for me? No one would rob me.
Yeah.
If you're here. And that, again, that's that Butch Cassidy thing, isn't it? If they were paying him to stop these people robbing him, well, if he paid me what he's paying them to stop me from robbing him, I'd stop robbing him. And that's essentially what he's offered here. He's offered the chance, go straight, work for me. And if he'd done that earlier, would he be dead? Because Mowbray couldn't have done anything about that. Or would he just kill them all then and concocted another reason to go after other people? Because he doesn't tell the rest of the gang that he's going to do that. that's just something he's thinking about and he talks about with his best friend in the gang.
Yeah.
What would the rest of his gang do? He didn't offer a job to all of them.
Yeah.
He only offered a job to him. So there's an awful, like you said, there's a lot going on in the back matter that you could also go, well, we don't know that that's true either.
Yeah.
But we do know Amy is let go. And we do know that she lives the rest of her life.
Mm.
And he does find her children, doesn't he? But yeah, even they don't know the full story.
No.
Because she's never talked about it. But at the end of the comic, she clearly goes and sees him at the Traveling Circus. And that's, for me, that was the ending emotional gut punch. The guy's all this, look into the eyes of evil, look into evil. What do you see, Mom? And she sees the guy she was married to.
Yeah.
She doesn't see him as evil. So was he?
No.
But that, so then again, that plays into the whole reinvestigation of history.
And then also, I suppose, going that one step further, is the comic what actually happened? We assume it is.
Yeah.
But is it?
We assume that the comic version is the legend.
Or the truth.
But it can't be.
Right.
Because if you read the comic, you know that that Enfield didn't kill Bill Barlow. That's not the truth that the townsfolk are told.
No,
so the comic can't be.
The comic is the truth, the real truth,
yeah,
allegedly.
Allegedly. But even there, that can't be what the townspeople were told.
Well, no, that's what I meant earlier.
Yeah.
When I said, you've got the comic tells the truth, quote unquote.
Yeah.
The back matter tells the truth through the lens of we're removed from the truth, so what's the closest we can get to the truth? And then the third truth is what is written by the victor or Mowbray.
Mm.
And that isn't mentioned in this because that's just how things are.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to...
Does it not say Mowbray left? Dude left a journal.
Mowbray and the other guy.
LQ West left a journal.
Yeah.
And he was the guy he was the traitor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Mowbray left a journal.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, you don't have to, Condon or whatever didn't have to say, this is the story, because everyone reading this within the context of the story knows that this is the truth.
Mm.
Then you get the other truth that goes, well, actually, no, that's not really true.
Mm.
What you believe was written by the victor. Here's what I've actually discovered. And then there's the third truth, which is the comic, which is what actually happened that only we outside of the context are privy to.
Right. So again, there's the truth, there's your truth, there's my truth, and there's the real truth.
Yeah.
Because everyone sees it through their own perspective.
But even then, you know, what is real and what's just Rashomon in?
It's true as well. I mean, you can only go off what the comic presents you, because pretty much the entire Enfield gang are dead by the end of it. Once it kicks in, that's one of the things I did like about it as well. It's pretty relentless once the action starts. And I suppose you could argue one of the decompressed arguments that we've had. I think Jacob's art's brilliant in there.
Yeah, I think it's great. My caveat with it is when you get to certain aspects, I felt like I had to go back and reread the last couple of pages. Because I felt like sometimes the staging was a little off and I was like, no, hang on, what just happened? Who's talking now? Where are we again?
See, I think the thing with that is you're used to, I mean, we're not, or you're not, but in some comics, you're used to the costumes telling you the characters are.
Mm.
And in something like this, you are basically thrown into the story and you have to follow who the characters are, or you do get a little bit lost with it.
Yeah.
Because they've all got those big handlebar moustaches as well.
And it was only a couple of times in the middle bits where he's doing... where he's distracting them while the guys escape. But then suddenly you've got him, and then suddenly there's other people, and then suddenly there's just guys on top of the rooftop now. And it felt a little bit where the directing got lost a little bit. Again, only really minor nitpicky caveats, but there were just a few times where I tripped up and I was like, oh no, what's just happened?
Right. See, there were moments where I had to do similar with, right, okay, who's this character again?
Yeah.
And like you flick back a bit and go, all right, so that's that guy. If I did have a complaint about it, really, it's that we don't really get to know the Enfield gang.
again, my argument that there's not enough there. It's all in the back matter.
It
gets a free pass because it's there for you to just carry on reading. But without that, there's very little here.
Yeah, we know who Enfield is. We know who Amy is. We know who LQ West is. Everyone else, we kind of just pick it up.
And I'd argue,
then they're killed.
Yeah, I'd argue that they serve no purpose other than to be killed. But with a title like Massacre...
And Gang.
Where else can you go?
Yeah. And maybe there's an argument to be made that it could possibly have been an issue or two longer.
Yeah.
Where we may maybe see the Enfield Gang work together.
And then my problem with the last issue wouldn't have been as bad.
Hmm.
I think my biggest problem with that last issue ultimately boils down to the pacing. It's breakneck speed, and then the last issue's just... it slows the brakes. And reading it issue by issue, I think that was my biggest problem with it, whereas if it was a bit longer, maybe I'd say this might benefit from being like a prestige format or double the page length. Because the problem with them doing bigger panels is it looks great, but you whiz through them. There's nothing there.
Oh, no, I don't agree there's nothing there. I do agree with you that they whiz through it. But also, you've got that thing that you've got one scene in Butch Cassidy with the gang.
Yeah.
How much about them do you need to know?
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of what the back matter was. It's like, imagine at the end of every scene of Butch Cassidy, you have to pause and then listen to a commentary about the gang that you left 40 minutes ago.
But also as well, if you're going to talk about that, how real and true is Butch Cassidy as a film?
Oh, well, yeah.
So maybe some back matter there would be useful to give a bit of contextualization to who they were as people. But you get an awful lot. The LQ West thing was the only one where I thought, well, why, where's this betrayal come from? Now, on the one hand, it clearly says in the comic he's new to the gang.
Yeah.
But if he's new to the gang, why did they let him in? Why did this close-knit family? Because all the wives and kids are there. Kids, no, not so much. But the wives are there. The girlfriends are there.
Yeah.
They are a family unit. They're not just an outlaw gang.
Right.
There's no girls in Butch Cassidy's club.
You see, that made sense to me because my interpretation of it is Mowbray wants rid of the denizens of the Chihuahuan Desert.
Yes.
And my interpretation of this is this isn't a tight-lit family. This is a community of outcasts.
Hmm.
People have just fallen into it. Doesn't matter where you've been, doesn't matter where you come from. You've just fallen into the Enfield gang. They're like a community, not a tight-knit family.
So they're not even your found family.
It made sense to me that rumours of this gang would bring you into it. You would find some kind of solace there, but it's not tight-knit.
Mm.
As long as you needed somewhere to go and you were, you know, running from something maybe, it made sense to me that nice guy Enfield would just let you in.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a big group as well.
Yeah, and I also get the impression, though, that Enfield didn't really trust LQ West. Because he finds him skulking around at the beginning of the story.
And even before that as well, when after they rob the bank, they say, where's he gone? Yeah. Oh, he's in town. He's got expensive tastes.
Yes. So I get the impression that if this hadn't happened, maybe you'd have investigated him a bit more and kicked him out earlier.
Oh, well, he already says, doesn't he, when he finds him in the barn, like, you can help us get out of this. And then after that, you can starve to death. I don't care.
Yeah, you can get out. I thought the action was, once it... So, which is really an issue too. It doesn't stop.
No, and
which I didn't mind.
I loved it. I genuinely think from the bit where you get to the warning shot, to the shootout in the bar,
mm-hmm.
to the situation at the stables is tense. As overly critical as I was, in the smaller moments, the little pieces, it's great. The character work's great. The dialogue is great. I loved nothing more than reading all the accents in my head. It's genuinely great stuff. I feel like ultimately there either should have been a double issue length.
Yeah.
Maybe 12 issues, not that. Or just some of that back matter in the actual matter. Because there's some great stuff here. Yeah. But I feel like it's very much like The Spy Who Loved Me. There's some great bits in it, but there's not a lot to string them together.
Mm. It's got a lot of good set pieces. See, I don't think we've ever disagreed as much about something as we did this. I thought this was really good. I liked that they had a decent relationship with Barley.
Yeah.
They seemed to get on quite well with him. Even though they're robbing him, they definitely didn't kill him.
Yeah.
So you've got a decent tale of righteous men who think they're doing God's work, being more pious than the bad guys. I liked the conversation that Hardesty has with, is he the, what's his name? I go, is he the under, he's the
Yeah,
Undertaker, isn't
yeah.
he? Where he says, speaking of such, Enfield's to blame. They say, you can't do it, can you? You have to do it. Speaking of such, Enfield's to blame, they say. Yeah, Enfield, right, sure. I got my doubts on that too. And you read it though.
Everyone sounds like Clint Eastwood.
Well, everyone sounds like Clint Eastwood, yeah, because that's the only South accent I can do.
Yes.
But you know, you've got see there where he's actually literally says it there. Enfield's killed folk, sure, but when you've ever seen him use a knife, but when have you ever seen him use a knife? Bill was cut across the belly, and but you can't not read it in
Yeah.
that. So it's the dialogue is on point. Everyone sounds like they should sound for the area that they're coming from. You've not got that thing where, oh, I don't know that people from there would say it that way, which we get a lot
Yeah.
in certain comics. Well,
It's
I think Phillips carries an awful lot of this. Because, like
yeah.
you say, Condon does say in his Texas Telegrams bit at the back that if you look at issue six, the reason I think that you say issue six breezes along. Enfield, Phillips's art's carrying it. There's not a lot of dialogue in it.
No.
And certainly you've got the scene in sequence in the middle where she imagines what the future would have been if they'd managed to get away.
Which parallels the dream she has in the second issue.
Yeah. Whereas obviously that isn't really what happens. And I liked her breakdown at the end of it where she ships the entire town,
Yeah.
which I think we've seen in other things, but I can't quite remember what it is at the minute. But she says, look what you've done. This guy wasn't the murderer here. You were all murderers. His blood is on your hands. But my personal issue with that was you cut from cut him down to you're then 40, 50 years later,
Yeah.
and Amy's visiting him in the circus. And I can't really see where else he could have gone with it because he has. Everybody who stood there is kind of like looking at the feet, a little bit embarrassed by what they've done, because you would like to think that they would question whether this was actually justice or what, because it doesn't seem like that way to us,
No.
but the story we've been presented with in the comic is that he didn't do this murder. So we know he's innocent. Whereas the townsfolk don't know that. The guilt that she's throwing at them is that you didn't allow for a fair trial. You've just caught this guy and hung him. And so his blood is on your hands. And you don't know if that ultimately made any difference to it, because Mowbray seems gleeful at this unnecessary death.
Yeah, because he orchestrated it.
Yeah. So the reader is then, again, you're asking yourself, who's the real evil in this town? Because he's ostensibly in charge.
Yeah. But that, I don't think that ever comes to question within this. It's beaten about quite a lot again in the back matter, but it's not a part of the actual story itself. That question of morality, that question over right and wrong and mob mentality, it's not there. And I kind of feel like that might be the source of my disconnect, especially with this issue, is that what should have been the payoff or the emotional payoff, it isn't there because you don't have these questions of morality. You don't have, essentially, there's no payoff to the overarching themes of the book. He dies and that's it. That's the end of the six issues. There's nothing kind of answered. Maybe it's a bit too difficult when essentially your narrative is one dimensional, but all of the other dimensions, all of the other characteristics ultimately have no payoff. He dies and that's it.
I do think you get there is a little bit of a payoff though. I think she does shame the townsfolk, but she doesn't shame the two people that are ultimately going to tell the
Yeah,
story.
and
History is written by the victors, remember? So I think you do get a bit of a payoff for it, but that's the point. Is it that this one event has led to the corruption of the town forever?
well, maybe, It's just a case that I haven't read that Texas board. Maybe to see it within context enriches it. But in and of itself, I've thoroughly enjoyed this for 5 issues.
Yeah.
I thought it's great fun. By the end of every issue, you sit there going, what's next? And then I just kind of felt like at the end of it, I was left with going, well, I want more. But why do I want more? Is it, am I, I'm not satisfied, but I'm also not in a rush to read the story it span out of.
See, I haven't read that Texas Blood,
Yeah.
and I didn't. I loved this. I genuinely thought this was a full meal.
I feel like I wanted to like it more than I did.
Coming soon.
It's the most hyped up comic at the moment. Maybe that's why. Maybe it just didn't live up to my expectations, or just for whatever reason, I wanted to like this more than I did. And there's so many bits throughout it that I was like, this is great stuff. This is great. This is what comic can be, should be. You know, films have been doing this, TV shows have been doing this, games have been doing this. This is great stuff. And then I just ultimately felt like it wasn't as good of as its individual parts. Maybe the problem's me.
Maybe the problem's always you. You can't argue taste with people. You can't argue what it made you emotionally feel. If
Yeah.
that's what you felt about it, then that's what you felt about it. I thought this was great. I got everything I wanted for it. I thought the back matter gave a completely different context to the story, gives more context to what you've just read, and adding depth and detail, reiterating the need to investigate and interrogate history. And this idea that sometimes we like a good bad guy more than a bad good guy.
Oh, yeah.
That at the end of the day, the Enfield gang weren't as bad as the people that killed them.
Yeah.
But the people that killed them are the ones that are hiding behind phrases like justice
The
and
ones in charge, the
law.
ones who have the
Yeah.
power, the ones who have the money.
Yeah. So it's asking you to question your lawmakers. It's asking you to be a little bit more critical in who you have in charge.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but that seems quite potent at the minute.
Well, yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was genuinely brilliant. Like I said, I can't decide. But like you said, we're only in March,
Yeah.
so it could easily be eclipsed by something else. I've bought volume three of that Texas Blood last week from Traveling Man because it's now no longer on Amazon.
Right.
And I didn't want a situation where I can't get hold of volume
Yeah.
three, but for stupid money. Although Jacob would probably have a stack of them
Probably.
when we see him at his next convention. So.
I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did really thoroughly enjoy it. You know, but I want more. And maybe that's a good thing. Give me more of this. Give me more of these characters. Give me more wormy, weaselly villains. Give me more heroic outlaws. I want more of this. I want more westerns.
That we agree on. I would love them to do maybe a Western story that's not linked to that Texas Blood.
Yeah,
Maybe that is one of the things that
have
hurt
it
it a little bit.
be an ongoing. Just give me this gang traveling. Just give me like 5 years worth of that.
Give me 5 years worth of the Enfield gang.
60 issues of Enfield growing up and culminating that. You know what?
I'd
I
be
will.
down for that.
Yeah.
Well,
Because give me more of him.
that didn't go the way I thought it was going to.
No,
I thought you were going to really enjoy that, and I feel really bad now.
I did really enjoy it. I just had a very large caveat.
So yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. All right, well, that's the Enfield Gang Massacre, which I thoroughly recommend. And it comes out in trade.
Maybe it reads differently in trade.
Maybe
Who knows?
well, I read them all together, so
Yeah.
did you?
So, yeah.
So why would it read different in trade?
How would they reformat the back matter? Would they just split up every issue
You
with
don't.
it?
Until we actually see a copy of the trade, which I believe is coming out this
And I
month.
am very, because I'm thinking of getting the trade, because I'm also very interested to see what the short story is.
Well, I'll just read yours then.
Yeah.
I'll talk
Well,
about it again.
it's for all my criticisms, it must have done something, because I will reread this. I will buy the train. I reread the trade. I reread it this morning and on the train here.
So and I've read it three times.
I didn't hate it and I didn't dislike it, but it's like something that I know is bad for me. It's like it's like a really sickly dessert, and I know it's, you know, I probably shouldn't have it all the time, but I kind of want to go back for another one.
See, I thought it was a decent steak meal.
Okay.
Not the dessert. I thought this was the main course. And it didn't bother me that I hadn't read that Texas Blood when I read this. I thought it's worthy of everything that it's getting aimed at it critic-wise. And I wonder if that's because I'd heard of it.
Mm.
And I picked up the first four issues on the back of people saying, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen effusive praise of it. Whereas now that it's finished, it's you can imagine that the trade is going to be, quote, pull quotes on the back.
Yeah.
Of people saying how good it is.
Part of me wishes I'd read it monthly.
Or wishes you'd read it before you knew anything about it.
Yeah. Or, but there was... I immediately went to pick up the next issue because every single... By the end of every single issue,
you just want to carry on.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe the wait would have been... Like a good TV show, but you've got to wait next week to watch the next episode. Mm. Like, maybe the plot twist... Not the plot twist, but the wait... would have just made it a bit more
well, and I like said, I had to wait for issue six because I read the first five in one go, but then I immediately sat down and read them all again.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it just as much second and then third time round as I did the first time,
because it's you breeze right through it. Mm. But I also think I would recommend not reading it as like one, or like take your time with it. I think
see, the second time I read it, I was paying more attention to the art, because it is easy to dismiss this as a little bit decompressed and just blitz through it.
Mm.
But I think if you're doing that, you're doing a disservice to Jacob Phillips's work.
And I also think you're doing a disservice to the characters who are... What is there is really well written.
Read it aloud in an accent.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
And then your mum...
Did everyone sound the same?
And then everyone sounded like Clint Eastwood. Everyone sounded like me doing a bad act. Which is probably a hate crime if I actually went to Texas.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they're very forgiving people, mostly. Okay, well, that went a bit different than I thought it would. I loved it. Michael didn't love it so much. I'd give it 5 stars.
I'd give it 3.5.
It's still a recommendation, as these things go.
3.5's not bad. It's about 60%, you know.
You wouldn't even stretch to 4.
3.75.
Just go to 4. God damn it. Right. Okay. Well, that's the Enfield Gang Massacre. I loved it. Michael was a bit more on the fence. What did you think? Come on, get in touch. Tell us. I loved it. I think it's great. We may have to do some Texas Blood at some point and see what you think of that then.
I'll hate it.
No, you won't. You'll love it. Okay. Let's play a promo for something that's time sensitive and then we'll do the wrap up.
Celebrating the tradition of apes and comics. For 2024, Rod has transformed JL May into JL April with a host of podcast all-stars. Look for the hashtag JL April 2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JL April.
Monkey around? Really?
Next time on an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics, The Unstoppable Doom Patrol. This is Michael's pick.
Yeah.
So I'm going to diss on... No, I'm not. But you'll have to see.
You will. You furiously change all your notes.
Furiously change all my notes now. We're recording it back-to-back with this one because we've fallen behind on the schedule. So there'll probably be no Clone Saga coverage, sadly. So you'll have to wait till the month after for that. And we'll hopefully... If we've not scared everyone away who loved the Enfield Gang Massacre, come on, listen to me, ignore him. And we'll
do anyway. Why you've got all your other shows.
But this is my favourite.
It's like I'm the Wesley of your podcast.
Shout
career.
Out, Wesley. But yeah, but this is still my favourite show. All right, and we'll see you next time for The Unstoppable Doom Patrol. Michael's pick. He's doing all the notes. Most of them. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey Kids Comics is a The Devil Will Make Work for Idle Hands to Do production and hosted by Andrew and Michael Leyland. All opinions expressed in the show are the opinions of the hosts and no one else. The free-to-use music that closes and opens the show was the sci-fi cyberpunk trailer by somebody called Stringer Bell on the pixabay.com free-to-use website. Thank you very much to him. If you would like to support the show, you can buy Michael and I, or both of us, or one of us, a coffee. Go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/A Leyland. In 1 month, an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics, coming in your ears. It's a date.